Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Before we start today's episode, a brief trigger warning. Vanessa's first source today includes the description of a homicide, and we reference it throughout the episode. So if that's something you don't want to listen to today, we recommend skipping this one. All right, on with the show.
Hi, Real Question Pod. My name is Caitlin, and I wanted to share a story with you. I consider myself to be a pretty passionate person, a pretty buoyant person, especially in the workplace, as I'm a leader and have to collaborate with all kinds of folks. And I found last year really challenging, as I'm sure many of us did, and I found myself worn very thin. And I remember one of my colleagues reaching out to me saying, "Hey, are you okay?" And I felt pretty confident and candid in my no. I was really not doing well. And I remember their reaction then being somewhat taken aback, and they kind of shut down, which I then felt sad and embarrassed and a complicated mess of feelings when someone rejects your vulnerability. And in later processing that reaction with a friend, they said something that really resonated with me, which is sometimes people ask, "Are you okay?" not because they have the capacity to hold space for your answer, but because they are looking for their own assuredness in the situation and in themselves. After sitting with this for some time, I then had many other follow-up thoughts and feelings, which were complicated and also messy. So I'm really curious to see what conversation unfolds. Thank you.
I'm Casper Ter-Kyle.
And I'm Vanessa Zoltan.
And this is The Real Question.
Casper, I love this voicemail from Caitlin because this is exactly the fear, right? This is what is at stake for me today with this question of how do we answer people when they ask us if we're okay? So something I've been thinking a lot about is I have endometriosis, which is not contagious, and there are days that I feel terrible. And so I have to ask myself, like, can I call in sick right now? And I don't know, right? It's like, if I'm throwing up, but I'm working from home, I can technically still keep working. And so, like, what is the line just like within myself as to whether or not I'm okay? And then over the last year and a half, emotionally, my dad has been very unwell. And there were moments where I was really absorbed with that. And Peter very lovingly would ask me if I was okay. And I would sort of check and I'd be like, no, but I can keep functioning, right? I'm not sobbing right this minute. And so then I get concerned that what we mean by okay is that I'm like still capable of participating in the economy, which feels like the wrong barometer for okay.
Mm.
And so this is just something I've been curious about. Like, what do I mean when I say I'm not okay, either on a work level or on an emotional level? What do I want from other people when I tell them I'm not okay? Like, why am I telling them that? What am I expecting from them? And I don't even know within myself when I'm allowed to be like, nope, I'm going into shutdown self-care mode. Mm. I am not okay.
Oh, wow. I'm just surprised how that simple question actually is really, really complicated, because I'm also thinking the way in which if you're on a street corner and a stranger asks you that question, that's very different from when your partner asks you that question, right?
Right.
So there's just all of these layers, both of how you're feeling and then also who's asking that question, who you're interacting with.
And what you want out of them, right?
Oh, say more about that.
I mean that even with Peter, right? You made this distinction between strangers and loved ones, right?
Hmm.
Even with Peter, when he'd be like, are you okay? What do I want from him? Do I just like want to remind him? Nope, still sad about the same thing I've been sad about for the last 5 months. Like, what does that do for anyone?
Yeah.
And there's this idea from Nora McInerney, a podcaster who I love, where she says sometimes the only thing to say is terrible, thanks for asking.
Mm.
And I love that idea, but also I like think that that hurts the people around you. And sometimes, right? I think sometimes you're totally allowed to be like, nope, still upset. Thanks for asking. Don't want to keep talking about it, but I do want you to know that I am still terrible. But sometimes that's just like not helpful. And so you go, yeah, I'm okay. And that way dinner can progress pleasantly and you can just like live in a world where your burdens don't eternally become the burdens of your loved ones.
Yeah.
In moments that they can't make it better anyway.
Yeah. I'm not going to make my like sad bowl grow and like engulf everyone else around me. It's like, no, I can stay in my sad bowl and like just be present with you. It's not that it's gotten better, but I don't have to make you get into my state with me.
Right. And like sometimes you can and need to, right?
Oh, 100%.
There was once that, you know, we were upstairs, Peter, the kids, and I, and I got some sort of phone call that upset me, and he asked me if I was okay. And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just going to go downstairs. And I went downstairs, and he followed me. And I am so grateful because, like, I wasn't okay, right? Like, and he made it better. He just, like, hugged me and, right? Like, and that was it. And he made it better. And so that was a moment where I was like, oh, maybe I should have said I wasn't okay, right? Because it was only his intuition and his goodness and the fact that he could tell that I wasn't that got him to take care of me. But it helped. And I'd like to think it helped both of us, right? He got to feel like he had made me feel better and I felt better. So I felt not alone and I felt loved and I felt seen.
Yeah.
And so that was a moment where I was like, okay, I'm not just inviting you into my bowl of sad to sit here with me, but like, I'm so grateful that you were here to make me feel better.
So in this conversation, do you want to figure out more of when to tell the truth or not? Or is it more about like understanding your own feelings better to know what to say?
So I think I want to know my own feelings, and I'm curious how far I should take them in both directions. Like when I should just totally lie and be like, yep, I'm fine, even when I'm not. There are moments where it just super doesn't matter and like suck it up. And then there are other moments where like, should I not schedule my life in such a busy way because I have endometriosis and I'm never okay? I live with a chronic disease and I shouldn't have days that I'm in meetings for 8 hours a day because it makes me tired and I feel sick for 2 days after.
Yeah.
And is it actually acceptable for me to say my day is full when I've only had 4 hours of meetings on it? Or should I make rules in my life that's like, nope, I'm already traveling 6 days that month. Absolutely no to more. and just say, like, I have endometriosis. I get sick if I'm traveling too much. Mm. I don't want to be weak. I pride myself on being strong, and I don't want to stop being seen that way. And so how much do I want to communicate also of my okay and not okayness?
So there's a lot wrapped up in this question of am I okay? Like, there's questions about your body's limits. There's questions about who you're communicating with, how you're communicating, when in the different stages of okay and not okay you're communicating. So I know we're going to need help from a text. And I'm curious what you brought with you.
So the first text I brought is called I Am, I Am, I Am. And it is a memoir by Maggie O'Farrell. It came out in 2017. She most recently wrote Hamnet. She is a Northern Irish writer who now lives in Scotland, and she is incredible. And so this is her memoir where she outlines all of the different moments in her life where she almost died. It's all of her near-death experiences. And what I'm quoting is the anecdote about her first near-death experience that she talks about in the book. And she is 18 or 19 years old. She is living in a caravan in the woods and is waitressing. And it's like her first taste of freedom. And she goes on a walk in the woods. And this man comes up to her and is creepy and puts his binoculars around her neck to show her something that's going on in a lake. And she doesn't like it. And she really brilliantly takes you into the psychology that I think is recognizable to a lot of us of you're dealing with someone who strikes you as scary for any reason, and you're doing this math of, okay, if I resist, are they going to get mad? Or if I give in, am I in more danger, right? Like, she walks you through her thought process, but she gets out of this situation, and it was creepy enough that she goes to the police and is like, there is a man in the woods who waits for women to be alone and is inappropriate with them. And this is the quote that I've brought. So the policeman says, leaning heavily on papers, you went for a walk, you met a man, you walked with him, he was a bit peculiar, and then you got home okay. Is that what you're telling me? And she says, yes, but he's about to do something really bad. 2 weeks later, she gets asked to be interviewed by the police. They're asking her, you filed a report a couple of weeks ago. We'd love to hear more about the man who you filed it about. And she interrupts in the middle of the interview and is like, he strangled someone with that binocular string, didn't he? And they're like, yep. And so she was right that there was something about the situation that was not okay. But this police officer says, but then you got home okay. Is that what you're telling me? And right, like, she has to say yes, but the answer is no, she did not get home okay. She got home having just met a murderer and like knowing, and she says, right, like, she grew up with a lot of violence around her. And so she was like, how do I say to this man, no, I can tell when someone is about to be violent. But she feels by this cultural moment, by this authority figure, that the answer to this question is like, yes, I got home okay.
I'm so struck by the two different narratives about the same thing. There's the police report, which the policeman reads out. And she's like, well, yes, in a way, factually, that's true. But as you just said, it's also not true because actually I didn't come home okay. So I'm curious, when you have felt that you have said you're okay, does it feel like, well, on the face of it, I'm able to do the things that you would want me to do, right? Like, I'm just trying to find if there's those two stories that live at the same time in your experience as well.
Yeah, totally. And I think that we've all had this, right? Where someone touches you in a way you don't like, and you're like, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine, but it's not fine. Something that I hate that happens, I would imagine, to all of us in crowded spaces, in bars and concerts and stuff, if we can remember those. Sometimes someone, rather than like touching your mid back, will touch your lower back. And like those 6 inches start to make it feel not okay. You're like, nope, you've turned this into a romantic, vulnerable moment, and it's not, you're a stranger, please don't touch my lower back. But you don't say that, right? Because that would start this cycle of escalation. And you're like, I don't want to escalate this, but this person touching me in this way is not okay. And right, like, we just don't say anything. We're just like, and actually often I feel like I then smile at the person. Like, okay, you're going by me, right? I feel like we all do this. And that is the situation Maggie's in, where he forces her to say she got home okay, which I feel like is similar to that dynamic where you're like forced to smile at the person who's just touched you slightly inappropriately.
This feels really important because it's not just an interaction between two people trying to figure out what happened. This is someone in a position of authority and a position to escalate, as you said. And so that theme of escalation is something I'm really interested in your experience with Endo. Like, what do you feel like the escalation could be if you say, I'm not okay? Like, actually, I can't work more than 4 hours today.
I mean, a couple of things, right? Like, that it'll negatively impact our company, that men in particular will like see me as weak, or that other people will feel as though they have the right to regulate what I do with my body, right? Like, I hike a lot and I exercise, and actually those things are really good for endometriosis. But it's like, well, how come you can bike for 45 minutes but not do a meeting? It just feels like if you put up limitations that are different than the cultural norms, then you're under a different level of scrutiny.
Huh.
And so exactly like that amalgamation of men who touch your lower back at a concert, if I were to say, hey, don't touch me like that, and in fact, don't touch women like that, none of us ever like it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he would have the right to be like, well, then why are you in a public space, right? Like, all of these other norms would have to be scrutinized. I don't want to have to defend everything about my life, so I'm just going to, like, go in the flow of things.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is part of what keeps Maggie O'Farrell from saying to the police officer, no, right? It's like, what if she's wrong? What if this was just a man who, like, gave her the creeps? And yes, it was weird that he put his binocular strap around her neck without her permission and waited for her in the lane. But, like, I don't know, maybe it was, like, harmless. And so she doesn't want to be hysterical, and she doesn't want this man to be questioned if he's innocent, right? It's like all of these calculations are going on when we feel like things aren't okay, but the rest of the world isn't simultaneously recognizing that things aren't okay.
I'm really struck, Vanessa, how you describe that experience of like escalation and not wanting sometimes to escalate things. I mean, it relates back to Caitlin's voicemail as well, of like how someone responds to your answer to that question can actually end up feeling bad, right? It can make you feel worse. And so whether it's someone disappointing you in how they respond, whether it's someone escalating to a point that you don't want it to be escalated, there's a whole other layer that I think you're helping me see from this source of Maggie O'Farrell's, where it's like there's a danger in telling the truth. So I'm really starting to see the stakes in this question are so much bigger than just like, do I feel like it? Or even, am I going to be embarrassed by it? It can be dangerous.
Well, and this Maggie O'Farrell example, like, is an example within an example, because she credits the fact that she behaved as though what this man was doing was okay with the fact that she survived. And who knows if it's true, but she was like, oh, yeah, look at the ducks. I got to go to work, but always behaved as though this behavior was okay and therefore never tripwired him into anger. And she doesn't do this while like blaming the woman who ended up getting killed. But like she's like, I think I in part survived because I behaved as though everything was okay.
Wow.
And so I really think, right, like sometimes behaving as if you're okay is a survival mechanism.
I mean, the stakes here are like literally life and death for Maggie's story. Are there ways in which, even at a less intense level, that feels true in your everyday experience as well?
I mean, it was certainly true when I worked for other people, right? Like in my last job before I started the company, I had to behave like I was okay a lot, right? Like I missed work sometimes because I didn't think I could physically make it to work. I thought that I would faint while walking to work. But when I was anything less than that sick, I went, even though I was quite miserably ill. And right, like I was working for someone who like definitely wouldn't have cared. And like also having a job with a chronic illness, it's like people will find excuses to fire you. And like I did not feel safe saying that I wasn't okay. I felt like my livelihood was on the line. And so, I behaved like I was fine.
I'm really hearing you point in this conversation to this idea of limits and your body's limits, the limits of what you can do, what you want to do, that sense of missing out, the sense of disappointing people, the sense of looking weak. But I actually also think it's about something different because the Maggie O'Farrell text is so illustrative of a power dynamic. And I think the thing we haven't talked about yet, maybe in this text, is something about the way in which as a woman, she's navigating a police system where women are not believed all the time, right? She's navigating an authority structure in some ways in whose self-interest it is to not take this seriously, right? Because if this policeman does take it seriously, it's going to be more paperwork. It's going to be a trip into the forest, and who wants to do that? Like, I'm projecting a little here, but I can imagine there's all sorts of additional elements to this particular interaction that she experienced. And so the thing I don't want to lose is, yes, it's about you and your relationship to limitations, but it's also about the systems that tell us that those limitations are somehow wrong. And I'm curious how that feels as someone with a chronic condition in a world that isn't designed for people with chronic health issues.
I mean, it feels bad. It also, I mean, like, this is not the next text that I brought, but if you'll bear with me.
Bonus text.
This is a scene of Grey's Anatomy. Where a black man gets pulled over right by a white police officer. And it's incredibly tense. And he knows he's been pulled over for no real reason. But he has to behave as if this whole situation is okay. Because he doesn't want to piss off the police officer. Because that'll make it worse. Right? Like, I just want to name, like, there's a racial dynamic to this too. Right? Like, and there's, of course, like, white men don't feel like they can't say that they're not okay because there's like a machismo. This is just like such a toxic thing that impacts everybody in different ways. And so I just wanted to name that. Maybe as a white lady, I actually get to say it more than other people. Maybe I'm actually sort of like the highest on the availability totem pole.
So we're not going to compare suffering because I think that doesn't end well for anyone. But I want to ask you in this kind of meeting between limitations on one side and then systems that put in expectations on another side. Like, if we were to take away that second category, what would it look like for you to thrive and live within your body's limitations, as everybody has limitations? What would it look like for you not to feel like you had to lie and say, I'm okay, when actually you're not?
No idea. I don't
Could
know.
Could there be more hours in the day? That's what I feel like.
I know.
It's hard.
I think it would look like a period of like really trying to pay attention and like notice myself and be like, oh, when is it that I don't feel okay? And is there a pattern here? But it, like, constantly experimenting is also annoying for other people, right? Like, I've been trying to be gluten-free lately because there's like a theory that endometrial tissue is less inflamed when you're gluten-free. And I was just at a wedding and like I had to explain to everyone why I wasn't really eating. And one guy was like, that's not real. And another woman was like, it was. And I was like, ugh. And then it was like this whole conversation, which I understand because I was at a wedding eating a Kind bar. And like, that's a flex, right? Like, that's a move. So like, I understand why it was a conversation. And also, like, I didn't ask for everybody's opinion on it.
Ugh, especially people that you're seated with where you're like, I don't know you and I'm never going to see you again.
And like, this guy was like, there's a blood test for celiacs. And I was like, well, there's actually a recent study about inflammation of endometrium. Like, I don't want to, what? Like, so weird. And so like, I just want to pretend I'm okay and just like eat at a wedding. Isn't that just easier than feeling better 100% of the time? Maybe. It might be easier than feeling healthy.
So it sounds like sometimes actually, even if you're conscious that you're not okay, and even if you're not engaging like an authority structure that's, you know, doing one thing or another, like, it still makes sense to just be like, no, I'm fine. Like, I know I'm not okay, but I'm actually not going to communicate that to you because I don't want you to have to do anything with your feelings about how I'm doing.
I think it might be time to transition to our next text because I think it's sometimes not just you know, helpful and like smoothing social norms to pretend to be okay when you're not. But I actually think there are times where it's outright virtuous. It is like a good in the world, a moral good in the world, to pretend that we're okay when we're not.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So tell me about this second text. I'm going to say I'm coming in skeptical.
Yes, I am bringing, I really think, one of my favorite films, the 2015 Kenneth Branagh, Lily James, Cinderella.
Wow. I've never seen this movie.
Oh my God, it's so good, Casper. Helena Bonham Carter plays the fairy godmother with these like fabulous fake teeth. It's so good. It's so good.
Ooh.
One of your Game of Thrones guys is the prince.
Oh my God, is it Richard Madden?
I don't know.
I love him.
Great. So the scene I'm bringing you is, so Cinderella's father has married the wicked stepmother. Lily James is living with evil stepmother Kate Blanchett and her two evil stepsisters. And the scene I'm going to play for you is when a servant comes to the door, a servant who had been traveling with her father, tells Cinderella that her father is dead and her evil stepmother and stepsisters are behind her. So what you'll hear, the stepsisters first, having received this news that their stepfather has died, and then you'll hear the stepmother with her response, and then you'll hear Cinderella's response to this news.
But what about my lace? My parasol?
Can't you see? None of that matters. We're ruined. How will we live?
And I think you... It must have been very difficult for you.
So the line that I want us to really look closely at is, thank you, that must have been very difficult for you. And I will say, like, she is, like, calmly crying, right? It's not like she's completely stiff upper lipping this moment, right? Like, she can't help herself. Her eyes are tearing. But I would argue that the stepmother is the one who has responded most authentically, right? Like, she's not okay. It is not okay that this man died. How are they gonna support themselves? And is honest about it, is like,
we're ruined.
This is not okay. And I'm going to say, it's not okay. We're ruined. But I love the move that Cinderella makes, which is turning around to this man at the door and saying, thank you. That must have been very difficult for you. Because his humanity still exists. And if she were to collapse into his arms and start sobbing, like, what is he gonna do? Mm. Right? So I just think that acting okay enough and not making it about her is this really beautiful, generous move.
Vanessa, I'm reminded of the snippet you shared up top in this episode of, like, you know, when Peter asked you, are you okay? And you were with the kids. And I think that's an interesting addition in the context of this story. And you basically said, yeah, I'm fine. I'm going to go downstairs. And, you know, you said one thing and you did. And not that they were competing, but, like, it was clear that going downstairs, you know, taking a little bit of space indicated that you did need a little caretaking. You were planning to do that yourself. I'm just wondering if there are moments in your own life where, even though you're the one, right, receiving the bad news, as Cinderella is in this moment, or you're the one who is in pain or something is not okay, but you're still taking care of other people, that you've done that and it felt right, like this is the morally right thing to do. Because that's what I'm hearing you point to in Cinderella, that this was the right thing for her to do.
Yeah, a friend of mine just had a wedding and she had to call me and tell me that there was a COVID outbreak at the wedding. Mm. And, like, obviously my immediate concern was for myself. And it was a breakthrough breakout. Like, everyone who had been getting it was vaccinated and I'm vaccinated. Mm-hmm. But what I said was, oh my God, I'm so sorry. That is so horrible. Mm. Like, is there anything I can do to help? Right? Because it's worse for her. Like, she just got married and the first thing she's doing after her wedding is calling all of her loved ones and telling them they might have COVID. And, like, that's not how anyone should have to start their marriage. And I'm only worried about me. She's worried about 200 people. And then I turned around and told Peter, right? And was like, I might have COVID. But, like, absolutely, I should not have responded to her being like, what? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How would that help anyone?
Yeah. Well, in that story, it sounds like there's a hierarchy of needs, that sense that someone else, right? Like, your friend has just got married. And so to put her needs first and then your needs second. But in the Cinderella text, isn't it the other way around? Like, it's her dad. Like, okay, it's her stepmother's husband, but the stepsister's like, and this messenger guy, like, fair enough, but, like, he's just the messenger. Like, she should feel okay about being like, no, it's about me.
Sure, it's about hierarchy of needs, but it's also about, like, what do we want from one another, right? My friend, what would I want from her if I was like, oh my God, oh no, I have to go get tested because these are the implications. Like, that doesn't help her, it doesn't help me. Whereas me saying, how can I help? Like, maybe there actually are things I can do. 200 phone calls are a lot of phone calls to make. Like, yeah. And yeah. I know 10 people at the wedding. Do you want me to call those people? Mm. Is there a mass email I can send? Right? Like, so it's also just about, like, knowing the realities of the world. And, like, first of all, this man was her father's servant and probably loved her father, right? So, like, he had a loss.
Hmm.
And just, like, what would she want from him? Like, what's he supposed to do? Feel bad that he, like, let her father die? Like, so hierarchy of need, but also just, like, reality.
Yeah. So how do you put that into context then in your own experience with Endo or other, you know, anything really? Is, like, I guess, yeah, what's the reaction that you want from people? Either when you say, no, I'm okay, even though you're not, and in the moments when you're like, no, I'm not okay.
I mean, my favorite reaction from people when I have to say I'm not okay is one that you've given me. It's like, okay, go, right? Like, you're absolved to excuse yourself. Because, right, especially with endometriosis, I know how to take care of myself. And, like, what I need is to be lovingly excused, right? Like, we'll make it up. We'll record another time, you know, like, don't worry, you go. And, like, that is what I need.
Mm.
But the other thing is, like, I guess I'm just curious about, it's just, like, okay to set up some limits and then just, like, not, just, like, hide, right? Like, tell the few people at Not Sorry, I don't do meetings more than this, right? Like, but to the rest of the world, just be like, sorry, I'm busy.
This is really interesting, I think, Vanessa, because it distinguishes, like, who needs to know, in part because the way they're going to react is going to be different,
right?
Like, the people in your life, the people who love you, the people you work with, like, we're all aware of the different needs that you have as you are of the different ones I have and everyone else in that, you know, that closer circle. But I think you're so right that, like, you know, the accountant, they don't need to know. And they actually don't need to know why you're not available or why you can't do something. They just need to know that you're not going to be there or you're not going to be able to do the thing. There's something powerful in this because you're getting to choose or you're getting to draw the line about who needs to know what. I don't know. There's something empowering in that, and at least in the way that you were telling it, that feels like in some ways often we overshare. I feel this often when I'm emailing someone. I'm like, I'm so sorry, I have to cancel this meeting, blah, 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 this reason, that reason, that reason. And I have just started deleting 70% of what I've written in the email to be like, I'm really sorry, I can't make this meeting today. If you feel the need to reschedule, let me know. If there's something urgent that I can do by email, please let me know. Thank you. And I feel like a bitch when I send that email. I really do. I don't like it, but I'm pushing myself because I'm like, why does this person need to know that there's a doctor's appointment or that this person needs to know that, like, actually my, you know, whatever has happened.
Right.
And maybe it's easier for them because then they're not, like, stressing or worrying about, like, suddenly you're dealing with someone's email, which is like, my sister is in the hospital, and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, that's actually maybe not helpful.
I know. I think that I've just, like, gone through phases, particularly with my endometriosis. Like, at first, I didn't tell anyone at all why I was canceling. Mm-hmm. And that harmed relationships, right?
Yeah.
Like, people were like, okay, you've become a flake. Like, you just cancel at the last minute all the time. And I didn't want to be like, well, I'm afraid I'm gonna faint in the car. So it's actually important for safety that I don't get in the car. And now I feel like I've erred the other way, or like I'm worried that I have, that I've just been like, because there is something about radical honesty, right? Like, it's a very compelling thing of like, your feelings will be less hurt if I tell you this is a physical limitation of mine. It has nothing to do with you. So it's just like this cycle of like, how honest to be, who to share what with. What we owe other people, do we owe them what's going in our lives, or do we owe them, like, you don't have to know what's going on in my life?
Yeah. So Cinderella makes a decision to say, thank you. Like, she's physically demonstrating, right? Like, she's crying. She's upset. She's just received the news her father has died. But she's kind of making the decision to be like, thank you, and leave, right? Like, you don't need to stay.
She isn't, like, overly generous about it.
No.
She's not like, thank you, do you want to come in? Can I get you a cup of tea?
Yeah.
Right? Like, she's like, thank you, that must have been so hard. And then she closes the door.
Yeah.
She moves into self-care mode.
That feels really important.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then she goes downstairs, right, and, like, hugs the baker who she's close to. So, yeah, I think that you're pointing us in the exact right direction, that, like, she is gracious to this person who, like, can't help her, and then goes and tells the person who can hug her and can help her. And so there is this, like, choice to it.
Yeah. So there's some relationships or some people where the right thing to do is be like, okay, thank you for letting me know, that must have been hard for you. And then some people where it's like, no, this is the person I can really share honestly with what's going on. And by the way, it's also the context in which you are with that person, right? Are you in front of like 3,000 people and there's cameras on you while you're with that person? I hope not for Cinderella, right? Like, secret paparazzi.
Am I the queen?
Yeah. No,
becomes the queen.
She does become the queen. Oh my God, literally, Cinderella. This is a real problem she has to navigate. But right, like, she goes down, says it's a private moment. Like, that's where she feels able to share that. So does that feel true, that it's like about who and where you are physically with that person?
Yeah. And I think that if we're bringing Maggie O'Farrell back into it, the thing that always feels bad is when someone else tells you you're okay and you're not. Right? When he's like, you're okay. And she's like, no, I just came here to tell you that I'm not okay. Right? Yeah. And he's like, so you're okay. Or right when the man touches your lower back and he's essentially telling you, this is acceptable behavior. And you're like, no, it's not. Like, that feels gross. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when someone else is telling you you're okay and you're not, that is a place that I think we have to question and be like, Can I sit with that for a moment? I don't think I am okay, sir.
Even, like, the police interaction is so gross because he's twisting her words.
Totally.
Like, that feels like a whole other level of, like, you know, he's heard something and then he's saying it back to her. I mean, it's classic gaslighting situation.
Yeah.
So that's when it's never right. That feels really clear.
Right.
So one final question, which is, so when you are with people that you, you know, you have that closeness with, you're able to share with, you know, you feel safe with, are there still times when you don't say that you're not okay? Or do you feel like you can always be honest?
Such a good question. I guess I feel like I always can be honest. It's about whether or not I should be honest. Or like be honest about my ambivalence. Like, yeah, I'm okay enough to record, I think, but like maybe I'll have to leave in the middle. Or like when Peter, right? Like, why didn't I just say to Peter, like, no, but I'll just go downstairs, right?
Yeah.
I guess that's how I feel.
Hmm.
I also am like super pro suck it up. And maybe that's just like gross and old fashioned of me. But like, maybe the answer is to sometimes use the Nora McInerney line of like, terrible, thanks for asking, but let's work anyway.
Mm-hmm. You know what's suddenly striking me? It's so funny. This word okay is supposed to be actually that exact middle ground. Like, because there's good and there's bad. And okay is, I think, supposed to be the word that would allow you to say that.
Right.
Of like, actually not good, but like, okay.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that anymore. And we need a word that describes exactly what you were just saying.
Yeah. It's like, I am capable of continuing. Thank you.
Or like, I'm not good, but I don't need any caretaking right now.
Yeah. First of all, I don't know what that does for the other person. And second of all, I have lovely friends who will then be like, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah. So when it comes to my health, I think I'm still unsure.
Yeah.
I think I need to push myself on that. I think that the times in my life where I feel really comfortable being vulnerable with friends tends to be of the, oh my God, this is so annoying variety. It's rare that I get more vulnerable than that, even with close friends, unless yeah. I'm literally throwing up or fainting, right? Like, and or sobbing in the bathroom, right? Like the moments where I can't help but share. And I wonder if there's actually a benefit to my sharing with friends, like the, I'm not okay, but I'm okay enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's move on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It makes me uncomfortable, though, that idea. Like, I don't like it, right? It's like showing weakness. And then you can't really control what they're going to think about you. And, ugh, I probably should, but I don't like it.
The thing, I'll just say as a friend, the thing that is helpful about that response is, like, then I know that the best thing I can do is just to carry on. And like, I'm not going to ask you more questions about it. I'm not going to be like, would you like a glass of water? But like, in a way, what Cinderella does so beautifully is like, she's clear. She's gracious. And then she's clear. And I feel like that's kind of what I'm hearing you say is like, I'm telling you the truth because I care about you and I want you to know what's going on. But I also don't need anything from you. And in fact, it's annoying if you start to become like Nurse Casper.
Please don't stay.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it may be time for you to wrap up, even though we've only just had the first course. Yeah.
I love you reframing the Cinderella moment because I've always seen this as like a radical form of graciousness. Mm. And I think it is, but I also think it's self-care. I think you're absolutely right.
Mm.
And I think that that's essentially what I did in that Peter moment, right? Where I was like, okay, like I'm not going to make a scene up here because I'm capable of getting myself downstairs,
yeah.
Going to self-care mode.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I think was important about that is that if he felt like the kids needed him, he had permission to not follow me, right? So it was.
Oh, that's so true.
Only if he felt capable of taking care of me would he come. And he did. And I guess I just think even when we need care, it's important to wonder about whether the other person also needs care.
Yeah.
But I love that you're pushing us to this, like Cinderella is also taking care of herself and potentially going downstairs and getting what she needs. And I think that is something I really want to push myself on is the, I'm okay, but like then going and getting what I need.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Well, I would like to thank Kenneth Branagh for directing this version of Cinderella as if it was one of his Shakespeare plays. I just feel like he takes this text so seriously and I really appreciate it. And the costume designers on Cinderella for making that beautiful light up dress. Anyway, I also want to thank Maggie O'Farrell. Everybody go read I Am, I Am, I Am and Hamnet and then Call Me.
I also want to give a shout out to Carol Cavan Dillon from Nashville who left us this beautiful little maxim. Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly. So tell them you're okay.
You've been listening to The Real Question. We can only make this show thanks to your support. So if you have the means to help us out, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/realquestionpod. And if you love the show and already support us on Patreon, in which case, awesome, you can also leave us amazing reviews. Just, you know, rave wherever you can review this podcast. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Real Question Pod and on Twitter at The Real Q Pod. We are a Not Sorry production. Our executive producer is Ariana Nettleman. We're edited this week by the fabulous Malika Gumpankum, and our music is by Nick Ball. We're distributed by Acast, and a special thanks to Caitlin for the voicemail this episode, to Julia Argy, Nikki Zoltan, Molly Baxter, Stephanie Pulsell, and all our patrons who this week will get a compliment from me because they are stunning.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
I am so excited to tell you that What Matters, our 2024-2025 season registration, is now open. If you don't know, What Matters is a 28-week class that we think of as our version of divinity school. Having gone to divinity school, I was like, everyone should get to do this. Everyone should get to have a dedicated season to thinking about what matters to them and how they can live up to their values. And we have tried to condense that experience into half a year while still making it spacious enough that there's time, but also not making you quit your job and go to school for 3 years. It's facilitated by me, my friends Mauricio Bruce and Michaela Bly. Mauricio is a brilliant chaplain and therapist. Michaela is a Grand Slam winning storyteller. The program is divided into 3 units, each focused on a different novel. You also get one-on-one chaplaincy time. You get small group time. It's an incredibly special, small class. Our next cohort begins August 21st and will run through March 12th. Payment plans and scholarships are available. Go to notsorryworks.com to reserve your spot today. Mm-hmm.